You ready for this?
I'm ready.
A surfeit of rulers. Surfeit is defined as an excessive amount of something.
All men are sinners, the fathers of the faith teach us. Even the noblest of kings and the most chivalrous of knights may find themselves overcome by rage and lust and envy and commit acts that shame them and tarnish their good names. And the vilest of men and the wickedest of women likewise may do good from time to time, for love and compassion and pity may be found in even the blackest of hearts.
We are as the gods made us,
wrote Septon Barth, the wisest man ever to serve as Hand of the King. Strong and weak, good and bad, cruel and kind, heroic and selfish. Know that if you would rule over the kingdoms of men. All I wrote in my notes is, let's go, in all caps. What a way to start the chapter.
I didn't write this, but I was thinking it as you read it. Nacho Harris.
Right? Our little perfect boy. Our little perfect boy who's just like MIA on Dragonstone, getting swole, working on his fitness. And maybe or maybe not sleeping with women that are being sent to him by the Hand of the King. And hanging out with his bestie while all these...
Not sleeping with her. Purportedly.
But sleeping, as we learned last chapter, close enough, pushing the boundaries. He's just over here just having himself a good time.
That's called soaking, right?
yeah, they're over there soaking.
Soaking it up in Dragonstone, to Harris and Alexandre. What did you think about Rogar sending or not sending those women to, and whether or not the one, whether or not Corianne Wilde was the only one sent. Focus on her last name.
Right.
Spelled W-Y-L-D-E.
Do you know what I think is funny about her? Okay, I'll answer a question after this, but I think what's funny about her is there's all these different versions of that story and what may or may not have happened.
Yeah.
And one of the versions is like, well, she was just trying to teach Jaehaerys how to eventually please his own wife.
Right, that was a good one.
She was just trying like really hard to kind of open his eyes and make sure that...
Well, he's training to be a good fighter. Why not also, while you're at Dragonstone, getting swole? He gets swole in different ways, both figuratively not so figuratively.
That's true. I mean,
in
seriously.
In multiple ways.
I just thought that was kind of funny the way they framed that. This is the most likely option. He probably didn't have a good time. He's just learning about it, you know?
Right. George really thought about all that. And keep in mind, Jaehaerys is technically still underage at this point, which is one of the Forbidden Four. So George is really good at talking about the sexuality or potential sexuality of those that are underage in the world of Westeros. So good for you, George.
But I think... regardless of that, I think Rogar's plan... Well, obviously, Rogar's plan did not work. He was kind of the star of the chapter in terms of his downfall.
Like basically the unwinding of Rogar Baratheon.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Honestly.
He handled it pretty well, I thought, within context, other than the...
until he didn't.
The Oris stuff that he sent in the background. I don't think... Was it Oris or that he sent? Orin. Other than him sending Orin to Old Town to go try to kidnap Arya / Rhaella.
Right. His little, unwinding at the end there. But
yeah, I thought it was, for the most part, not so catastrophic or... I mean, I guess it just says more about how he doesn't really have the spine enough to be the guy that he always wanted to be, the guy that was able to face Maegor in single combat. You know, he was really, I guess, set up to be the person that was able to have some kind of power and command some kind of respect enough to be in the position that he's in, but ultimately not be able to do it on his own. Right. So he's using these Targaryen props, these little action figures to gain him the ability to get that power while he keeps some of the respect and I guess loses it, as we read in the eyes of someone like Jaehaerys and who knows everyone else at the time that we didn't get full context of. And I don't think we really got a lot of context either about how Alyssa really felt about him deep down, other than...
Until the end.
But even then, it was after he really spoke out.
Right.
She's she is pretty good. I guess all the Targaryens, really, except the ones in the greatest position of power, the ones that have dragons, you could say, are pretty good at playing the political game. Like, knowing how to play the political game a little bit better than everyone else, maybe minus the Lannisters at this point.
We only really get Rhaena's feelings on her man. She's like, he's nice.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
He's just kind of a nice guy.
Yeah.
That's why I like him.
Before we started recording, you said there's so much that happened in this chapter. And so quick apologies to everyone listening if you're looking for us. Because what I wanted to do was, I was going to say, if you're looking for us to focus on one topic for a long stretch of time, because what I wanted to do just now was start talking about the book that was passed from hand to hand and rewritten almost like a biblical text, mm-hmm. a book of love, if mm-hmm. you will, The Sins of the Flesh. I forget the other name for it, but now I want to talk about Raina and Andrew Farman and Mark Farman and Franklin Farman.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like George R. Martin kind of did the same thing, because...
Well, and so I really like that part of this
so
chapter.
So many points in the chapter. He's like, okay, well, now we're going to pause on this.
Heading back east to King's Landing.
Yeah, I want to talk about something different.
Yeah,
I wanted to go into something. I thought that was an interesting mm-hmm. way to weave. And maybe that's why it felt like this chapter was kind of chaotic, is because we were just bouncing from story plot line to plot line mm-hmm. to plot line.
One queen to one queen to one queen.
Right, which I think was highlighting what he was essentially trying to say in this chapter, which is...
A surfeit is all happening at once.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, it's all happening at once. Everybody has opinions, strong opinions. And I feel like everybody came out of this relatively unscathed, regardless of... I think Rogar is the one who really lost the most in this chapter. Mm-hmm. Well, and Alyssa, too. She was pretty devastated by the end.
Yeah, yeah.
She, like, dismissed herself from public life. But... Aside from the two of them,
that was a bummer.
Which I guess are pretty star players, like nobody died. You know what I mean? I think that things could have played out much worse for every single one of these people. I mean, with Rhaenyra, with Alyssa,
Raina.
What? Oh, my bad. Sorry.
It's where it begins.
With Rhaena and Alyssa. I think any of them could have easily, you know, been killed in the positions that they put themselves in this chapter, but everybody remained relatively unscathed despite the chaos. And so I think that, to your point, George did a really good job of bringing that to life as we bounced around.
Yeah, and it made it all feel like it was happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost, this chapter is almost an episode of a TV show, even though it had the same sort of... a lot of the narrative release context, where it was just releasing it, telling it to us rather than experiencing it, obviously, as we do in A Song of Ice and Fire, or as we have in some of the a few of the other more specific chapters in Fire and Blood so far. Definitely not like the first one, which was like the Silmarillion-esque biblical context of, and then Aegon and
so
his
boring.
Sisters. Really?
Well, looking back now.
But compared to this, for sure, because this had like the hustle and flow of it.
Right.
But there was a good mixture of it, but not really a lot of dialogue, just like cut-ins.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really felt the presence of Gildane and Sept and Barth in this, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, speaking of getting names right, we should tell everyone that we're going to be presenting and being at and attending Ice and Fire Con.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In a month now. I'm reading it here off the top of my notes. This is going to be the only time I use my notes. I just have it set in my my Maps app where I'm driving.
Smart.
So I'm going to, this is the town name. I only know it from the lodge/state park that it's in, but here's the name of the town. It's in Mount Sterling, Ohio, April 21st through 24th at Deer Creek Lodge. And just so you all know, there is a pool that has the name of the lodge painted at the bottom of the pool.
What a relief,
honestly.
It says
Deer Creek Lodge in the pool. I think there's antlers.
Like
what a relief. There's sigil. Yeah. And there's a hot tub and there's a gym. What else is there? There's cabins. It's pet friendly, and that's where Ice and Fire Con is going to be in a month.
I'm so excited. I've never been to Ice and Fire Con, and so this is my first one, and we're going to have a really good time.
Yeah.
We are going to throw a party.
Yep.
Details TBD,
mm-hmm.
TBA, and we're going to be on a bunch of panels.
Can we say the name of the party? I can't say it in a different language, but we can say it in English. Or should we wait to
let's
say
wait.
It in
let's
the,
wait.
A different language?
Yeah,
okay.
Let's wait.
Got it.
Party details are a brewing, and... Come hang out with us. It's going to be a really good time.
Yeah, if you do end up coming, use your. I think there might still be a checkout like code section, so they know that you came from us. We don't get paid for it, but it helps them. Like, I guess know if they want to invite us back next
right.
year.
How much sway do you?
Yeah,
have?
Like how many people are actually coming to see you guys at that convention? I think it's just goo. I actually looked for it in our email because of COVID, this mm-hmm. this con's been canceled a few times, or rather rescheduled a few times. So I couldn't find our promo code, but I'm pretty sure it's goo. And if it's not goo, you could just put goo in there. And I think that Tara will understand that it was meant for us, because there's not a lot of other shows out there. Or people come to the con selling tickets with the word goo in it. So let's get names right, or at least try to get names right at that
while
point.
While we're at the con?
Yeah.
Nah, it's going to be even worse there.
Yeah, nah.
It's so hard.
It
although,
is hard.
Honestly, I'm really proud of us for how well we've done so far.
Really?
So, yeah.
I feel good about, after finishing this chapter, and I know we said it in the last one where I was like bragging that, oh, I feel like my feet are grounded.
Right.
I have a clear foundation of
where
we are.
I know everyone's names.
Right. Right now in Fire and Blood, I felt that way in this chapter, for sure. And I think it was probably really helped by the way he sort of, we were talking about, narratively jumped from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
It just kept everything in context a lot better. And I didn't get Alyssa or Raina, or I didn't call Raina in my brain accidentally Rainera or anything
Whoops.
Like that. And for all intents and purposes, revisiting those at Casterly Rock, like revisiting those Lannisters, I remembered a lot of the things that George revisited, like the things he reminded us about who fought for who and like what, how that old alliance with Raina would sort of be able to be rekindled easily. So I'm feeling pretty good about Fire and Blood right now. You said right before we recorded that we're a third of the way through the book now.
Yeah, we're about a third of the way. So I'm excited about that and kind of what that means for, like you said, good for you. With your, you got your footing. I feel like I'm...
Reading text is
not too
better.
Far away from you.
It's just better than the audiobook, I'm telling you.
Oh my gosh, I had already pretty much given up the first time I listened to the audiobook at this point.
Well, even on information that you care about, it's hard not to just like lose your train of thought, or
right.
rather find your real train of thought and tune out the stuff that's happening in the background.
Right. So thanks for joining us on the journey, everyone.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
Point.
And come to Ice and Fire Con if you even want to a little bit, because people are going to be coming in really hot because this has been rescheduled a few times. And so everyone's going to be really looking forward to hanging out. And they've made a really cool program, and we feel really grateful to be included on a bunch of those panels. And Hannah's flying in early on Friday to make it for some of those panels.
From a different con.
From a whole different con.
A solar con.
Yeah.
Anybody want to do do some deals?
It's all about Dorn.
yeah. It's going to be a good time. I wanted to read this quote.
Please.
That kind of sums up the whole chapter, I feel like. And it happens here at the very beginning. And this is such a good one and done sentence of the chaos of this chapter. It says, "The amenity and unity of purpose that enabled Jaehaerys, his sisters, and their mother to topple Maegar the Cruel had begun to fray as long simmering resentments and divisions made themselves felt." And I was thinking about, as we're reading this chapter, and I feel like the whole time we've been reading Fire and Blood, I've been thinking a lot about the importance of just like the strength of your squad, the strength of the people around you and the unity, because we only see success when people are really strongly tied together and they're united in purpose, or when they're even united in proximity. And I think so much of the issue with Rogar and with Jaehaerys and with Raina, I'm scared now. Anyway, so much of the...
Raina of Dreamfire is her dragon. She's called the Queen of the West. She also has
wall.
A couple more nicknames.
Listen.
That they're featuring a Song of Madness. I forget it. All of her nicknames. Those are the ones I remember. Sorry, go on.
The main issue, I think, is just the distance between them. Not only in purpose, but just also in physically. And so I think that so much is lost in translation. And I think that I'm excited and looking forward to watching Jaehaerys and Alysanne take the throne together as this unified thing. And they've spent so much time working on their relationship and their solidness that nobody could break them. And so I think that that is going to be the, this is a very obvious point, but that's going to be the only reason why things continue to work out for the Targaryens, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because when there's so many different opinions, and even as like Rogar is kind of messing with trying to crown other people, there has to be such a strong unified front at the top. And we've just seen that time and time again in Fire and Blood so far. And so it's made me just think a lot about how important it is to have
like
your
Aegon,
people.
Rhaenys and Visenya.
Yeah, your people. Really close to you, really strong, and not letting all these other people or opinions kind of infiltrate the main idea, because that's when you start to go astray and mm-hmm. that's when you start to see everything unravel.
Right.
And while Jaehaerys and Alysanne are like really kind of I don't know, I was kind of annoyed with them in this chapter. And I know that he's not yet the guy, so there's not a lot that he can do. But they're just so far removed from everything that's going on. And so it makes me feel a little bit more for Alyssa and Rogar. I know that they made some mistakes, but I feel for them in this chapter because they're the ones getting the heat, or they're the ones trying to at least get in front of the heat.
Right.
And I know that Jaehaerys and Alysanne are preparing, and they're kind of trying to shore themselves up, but they're just, like, not participating, it feels like.
I feel like a big reason why so much of this interpersonal drama has turned into larger issues is because they're not dealing with a lot, really, especially compared to what leaders in the past or what people probably in Essos are dealing with.
There's no real threat.
Well, think about what was the real threat before. Septon Moon and the Moon Boys. That was, they're like, this is the largest threat to the realm right now. And Jaehaerys has just taken the throne and this is our biggest threat. And it's like, okay, well, we dealt with the barefoot pious folks when Maegor was a king. And for the most part, if you remember the procession that they came out of the woodwork literally in support of the new king for, it seemed like it was all but crushed. The new High Septon, we've got still, you know, wishy-washiness with like Matthias, Septon Matt hanging out and making us feel like there's not any, I guess, long-term resolution. Like, it's still wiggly. They still have power and the ability to question what you're doing based on their own personal gain. Right. But it still feels like it's not much of a threat as it was before. For the most part, they're gone.
Until that North thing. There was that small thing.
A lot of them went to the wall, but that's a sort of an isolated issue.
Right.
And so Septon Moon and his Moon Boys were like the ones that didn't go there and that had their own thing going on outside of Old Town. And they're like, this is the biggest problem that we have.
Right.
And so now that we've dealt with them, which really they only needed to cut the head off their leader. So how big of a threat was it really? How big of a threat was it really? I'm drinking a margarita. Sorry, everyone. How big of a threat was it really? For real, though. And in this one, how big of an issue is their interpersonal drama? Clearly, it's enough for all of the, I mean, in the way George contextualizes it, you can't argue with the feelings that they have,
right,
for sure. But still, the biggest thing that they're dealing with here outside of that is that they don't have enough money to do all the cool stuff that they want to do, which
the
doesn't
dragon
that kind
pit.
Of, I get it, but doesn't that kind of sound like first world problems a little bit?
I guess you're right on that front, that there's no real threat to the kingdoms. And I guess really our only losses are interpersonal at this point. But those interpersonal things may come to bite you down the road.
They will when you especially have nothing else to bother you from, which is why people always talk about here at IRL that if an alien's invaded or if a global pandemic, wait, that did happen. You know what I mean? Like if something really serious happened, then maybe we would find a reason to come together and stop bickering over interpersonal drama. You know, maybe White Walkers is something that we always think about, at least in the context of A Song of Ice and Fire, but not to quote the show that must not be named, or at least the season era that must not be named. We saw that when the White Walkers were at least displayed conveniently in the Dragon Pit in GOT, you know, people cared, but ultimately a lot of them still saw that as an opportunity to take advantage of stuff. We just saw Batman, you know, like Penguin at the end of Gotham City, like, what shall I do in the disrepair in the smoking ruin?
Chaos is a ladder.
Exactly. And I must climb it out of the dragon pit that is not being built. And that's our problem right now. So it's money. And you were saying that Jaehaerys and Alysanne are kind of like leaving everyone out to dry a little bit because they're not there, but they gave the power to the Queen Regent and to the Hand of the King without question. And they're able to make unilateral decisions that they don't really have to worry about the consequences for. So at the same time, I don't really feel that bad for them. And at the same time as that, I think that Jaehaerys and Alysanne, this is the best time for them to be doing the strengthening and the tutelage that they need to do to actually do a good job at their jobs later. And he doesn't even have the ability to take his job right now.
It's
so
true.
It's at the same time, like, what? I don't think that your point was bad. I think that I think that it would have been shored up if they would have been around as well. But I do think that this is sort of like a worthy sacrifice that, oddly enough, with all the narrative that George gives in this context, he doesn't really acknowledge that. Maybe that's meant for us to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's fair. I mean, he can't be in charge right now. He's too young. I mean, at the end of the day, his mom is the one. And so he legally doesn't have the same authority. But it's just interesting to kind of watch. I think it more so highlights that division of power. And I think that especially with someone like Rogar, who was really hurt. I wanted to read this thing about Rogar. And it says, a proud man, he had been stunned and angered at the ingratitude the boy king had regarded. At the boy king he had regarded as a son and humiliated when forced to back down at the gates of Dragonstone before 50 men of his own men. Anyway, I butchered that. But the point is that Rogar's like this really proud guy who I think has the interests of the realm for the most part at heart. Like he's not, he seems.
You really think that?
Well, I think he has a little bit of an ego. And so I think that he definitely feels my way or the highway kind of thing. But I also understand the difficult position that you're being put in when you're given the opportunity. You're the one who's basically in charge.
Yeah.
And Jaehaerys is off making what a mistake, quote unquote, a mistake.
One that brought them down before, historically.
One that brought them down before, you know. So he's kind of put in a tough position. And I think that difficult position plus his ego and his proudness. What was I saying? It just.
Rogar.
It brought him downfall, but I think.
Awkward position.
Yeah, he's put in an awkward position. But I think that, like. Oh, I was trying to say the physical distance highlighted between all of them. Especially as folks kind of start coming to Jaehaerys and they're starting to travel to Dragonstone.
Yeah,
and
when he goes to
Driftmark
as well, which is a big push.
Like, yeah. Oh. And so they're starting to really. The people love Jaehaerys and Rogar is trying to hold on to everything.
They're
and
ignoring
it's not
Rogar
working.
Right now, basically, at the tail end of it. They're ignoring him because they know that Jaehaerys is about to ascend to his rightful position and Jaw's not really cutting in. That's how I've been referring to him in my notes, by the way.
Jaw. I'm referring to him as Jay.
Jay's good. I like Jay. So Jaw is. Jaw Rule? He's kind of like cutting him out completely. And I don't know if he would always done this, but
he doesn't like him. It's because of his mom.
And but also because of the marriage stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Cutting him out of conversations before. So rather than if he would have just, and he didn't need to do this, obviously, because they're in a much better position. And as Alyssa says in this chapter, I put it on our Twitter account earlier. She's like, yeah, but they have dragons. Like these children, they might be children, but they have dragons.
Right.
So is Rhaena. But anyway. I guess Jaehaerys didn't need to think about how to take care of Rogar in a way that made him feel included so he wouldn't do something like this, like potentially pitch another, what he did originally, like do the same thing again, another Targaryen to ascend to the throne that he could work for and thus.
And mold.
And mold.
I need to find the exact, because the exact quote was a little creepy.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of lacked his own self-awareness in that moment where in the context of Maegor, and all of the violence and bloodshed that was happening, just the in general chaos, not knowing that the consolidation of power that had been built for the last 35 years or so, 40 years or so, no, longer than that, almost 50 years, had been for like a waste because it might all have I thought she was going to sneeze.
Sorry, I was about to sneeze.
Might all have been a waste because it would have all fallen apart. So they they did rally behind Rogar's idea of, by the way, this person should actually be the leader because it was the same idea, the same structure that had been built before. And so that idea sounded fine. But now that someone that is in power technically but hasn't ascended to age to be able to step into the role where their mom stops being the regent and they can be the active king. And in the case of them that not everyone knows yet, king and queen. Why would they listen to another tale of the same thing when ultimately at that point it sort of shines a light on what I thought was the true motivation, which was in my mind when you were saying earlier that you think that Rogar might actually be doing this because he believes in the realm. I would have believed that for a while and I would have sort of looked past all the selfish stuff that he did that Jaehaerys looks down on because, I don't know, why not just do that stuff? Seems fun.
Right.
You're a Baratheon, after all. You're from the Storm Lords, and you have Targaryen blood. It's all good. So why not have, like, a good time while you're being so unselfishly in service to the realm? But when you do this again, using another Targaryen, I think it really does kind of shine a light on the true motivation, which is that you just want to be in that position. And you presenting yourself as a person that's really the only person that has the ability to mold this new leader without really saying it, but sort of saying it, again, I think kind of at that point fell upon people's ears a lot less stickily because they weren't dealing with all the chaos and the potential falling out of everything that had been built over the past several decades.
Mm-hmm. Princess Iria, there is a fire in her Jaehaerys does not have. She's young, but I can continue as her hand, shape her, guide her, teach her all she must know.
Us going from a feast of dragons to fire and blood.
She has a stronger claim. Her mother and father were King Aenys's first and secondborn. Jaehaerys was fourth. His fist slammed against the table. Then Bennifer tells us her mother will support her, Queen Rhaena, and Rhaena has a dragon. Shape her, guide her, teach her all I must know. It's right. And so, I mean, I think that exactly highlights what you're saying. Yeah. He felt like he was the only one that...
Or at least was trying to present it that way, yeah. So it was sticky in sure. Some way. Like, he's like, this is my usefulness to the situation. Because someone else could have said, okay, well, if she needs to be the ruler, then she can just be the ruler. Like, we can do it.
Right.
Or why does it have to be you? Again, clearly you're doing this because you're not happy with how you've lost control with the young king.
It's so funny, though, because he's already in the position. So all he has
to do... That's what's messed up about it.
All he has to do is kind of keep his mouth shut about, again, something that...
What do you think? Sorry, you go on.
Well, all he has to do is keep his mouth shut about something that we know could potentially be a major issue. Again, it's kind of, like, funny because it's a real issue. So it's not so black and white.
What's a real issue?
Why he's pissed off in the first place about the marriage between Jaehaerys and Alysanne.
You think he's pissed off about the marriage being the thing that might... shake the faith enough for the people to come after them, or that they disrespected him at Dragonstone and thus disrespected his plans as well?
It's that they disrespected him at Dragonstone, but that only came about because of the marriage thing, you know?
Yeah,
so I think
dude,
we can boil it
yourself.
Down to that. Exactly. So it's a legit reason for there to be drama or discontention or, wait, is that even a word?
It sounded
or just
good.
An issue.
I thought about that too, but I like it.
But all he had to do was kind of... But then
play it cool.
But it's kind of a hard, fine line because you don't want to just be a yes man. Because what's the point of being hand of the king if you're just going to say yes to everything? But he seemed to spiral because of his hot-headedness. And if he had just kind of taken a step back and watched it and wait and see how everybody responds and let Jaehaerys say things in his own time... then he's going to continue to remain one of the most powerful men in the realm.
Yeah, and not do, like, shrink into nothing, go to the wall.
Into completely harming your reputation. Like, it makes me think about, this is so completely unrelated, but, well, actually, I'm not even going to, never mind.
No,
I was going to give you a football analogy.
Say it.
There was this, like, really storied football player in BYU football history, mm-hmm. You know, legendary, whatever. Then he came back as a coach and he was a terrible coach and he only lasted 2 years. And it made me feel so sad for him because it's like he used to be the guy.
Like head coach?
No, he was the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. He used to be the guy.
Was he QB?
Yeah.
Okay.
And now he's not the guy. Like, and he tried to like relive his glory and then he just like totally messed everything up for him. Mm. At the end, now he just has like this little bit of a black spot on his resume. And that's kind of like Rogar a little bit here. It's like he has this really long and storied career, but then he has this one meltdown. And not, you know, it's not exactly the same thing.
It was not a good meltdown, though. In front of the wrong people at the wrong time.
It was the worst possible meltdown.
How do you not know Daemon Valerian is just hanging out in the eaves the whole time?
I know.
For real.
I know.
How do you not understand that that's happening? How do you not have an idea of context? How do you not think about what happened at Dragonstone in the first place? I guess he just sort of hoped that his speaking very clearly and directly, like he did at Dragonstone,
would
be the thing that carried it. But at the same time, it's like you said before, it's about at the beginning of the whole conversation, if that squad is not there, then you're not going to get it. It's just not going to, like, no matter how good your words end up sounding, it's just not going to be there unless you have the squad or at least hangers on.
And he didn't
way.
Even have the support of his wife fully at this point.
Yeah.
You know, because she had conceded at this point and just kind of been, even recently, you know, hands off. And so I wonder if he and Alyssa had been a little bit more united as they had been in the beginning when they first went to Dragonstone to kind of, maybe she could have tempered his temper. But
It takes a special kind of asshole to scheme against your kids. And I never got that vibe. Really, George never wrote Alyssa like that.
Yeah, true. Exactly. You know? Exactly. She just was scared. Yeah. You know, she was just a mom who was trying to protect her children.
Still a Targaryen, still political, but not ever on the edge enough to be brutal.
Right. That. Especially when it came to her family. So.
Yeah, or let alone her kids.
Yeah.
Probably more okay with the family. But kids, that's a weird one. And Rogar doesn't have any kids of his own. I guess that probably doesn't help with contextualizing it from that point of view.
He thought Jaehaerys was his son.
He didn't even like Jaehaerys at all. Jaehaerys was like what Rhaella would be to him.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, a means to an end. Like one that allowed him to be in the position to have as much fun as he did. I mean, the bawdy good time that he had at the Golden Wedding. I guess we should just say it directly. I mean, you know it, I know it. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably read the chapter. But if you didn't, George talks about how, and he didn't talk about this before, like during the Year of the Three Brides chapter, he didn't say that Jaehaerys was aware or looked down on Rogar's activity. And he did in this chapter. So while Jaehaerys was in his solar meeting with those people, Rogar was making the eight, basically, or maybe even the 14, some version of that. And I guess it didn't seem... At the same time, it was his sort of like wedding time, so I understand, and that everyone understood, and that's why it was sort of supported and not gone into, I think, in that chapter. But now recontextualizing, see, that's the thing about messing up your situation. If you do that, and then you do other bad stuff, then the things that you did before are going to be looked back on with less kind eyes.
Exactly. What I was trying to say about all those little maidens he couldn't get through,
right.
You know? It's so...
If Jaehaerys only knew that part, too,
yeah,
he'd
you know?
Disrespect him even more.
Yeah. Little did we know it's going to play into a larger thing. So.
Right. And it did.
It does.
Because he tried to be sneaky.
Right. Well, and what struck me, too...
So
what struck me, too, is a short amount of time that all of this really took place in. Because you get to the end of the chapter and... It's like Rogar was thinking about 2 years before when he had entered to fight Maegor.
Just 2 years, man.
2 years for the wedding. I mean, for all of this, it's so much to happen. Like this rise and fall so quickly.
Yeah.
I was just really struck by how short of a timeline that was for him.
And he didn't even get to inherit a throne that had a bunch of extra money to do a bunch of cool stuff.
Right. He didn't even get the dragon pit.
Yeah. I thought that was weird that he wanted the dragon pit built so bad. Was it just to seem like he had something done, like sort of like build the wall kind of energy?
I think totally. Because
I guess it had nothing to do with restraining the dragons, did it?
No, but I think it had to do with...
Pressing his wife or
no, something? No, because... not Dragonstone, King's Landing
had
is
no
still getting
it.
Built up, you know?
And there's no real roost for dragons there.
Yeah, and when you have buildings with their name on it, I think to the common folk that seems cool.
If it's all scaffoldy too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. If he was sort of responsible for making something that would last for generations, that would be kind of cool.
And something that seems to, you know, this affects my daily life as a common person.
Yeah, we look at the dragon pit.
I don't know, but you know what I mean? Like,
right, yeah, I know what you mean. He should have built like really good outhouses, how they did in the Roman Empire, like
cool
having like really awesome
something.
Bathhouses all
I know,
over the place.
I
forget the name of the emperor that did that.
But instead they just try to tax them.
That guy was
scrambling.
Yeah, what was that guy's name? Celtigar? Edwell Celtigar? I remember that. How about that?
Impressive. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Edwell Celtigar worked with Maegor, and then he was one of the people, rather than being shoved off to the side in the last chapter, they like brought him in and they took him away from being hand. I think that's what he was. I don't remember that, but they made him master of coin and he made a couple bad decisions. Like, of course, like the most lazy decision that people in power do make, where they're like,
taxes.
Well, yeah, but let's not tax people that are important, that are going to get mad at us. Like, let's tax the small folk. So the small folk stopped hanging out more freely. And then they also tripled the taxation at ports, for example. So what happened because of that, we're probably going to see the ramifications of, unless Jaehaerys magically fixes it as he does most
gas
things.
Gas prices went up.
In the next chapter, unless Jaehaerys magically fixes
right.
it, we're going to see that... The other towns like Maidenpool and Casterly Rock becoming Lannisport and I forgot the third one, but it's another one that is like really mixed up in the sort of like geographical referencing of places, and especially in A Feast for Crows, and there's a lot of activity in the sort of like mid Westerosi region. I forget what it was. It's a really obvious town, but anyway, these towns are like now being bolstered more because their port activity is more attractive.
It even says so in the chapter. It briefly mentions the fact that trade is just kind of dwindling to a halt for King's Landing.
Well, it's mostly because of that, though. Like, how are you going to raise taxes so much on a place that you're also making less cool for people to hang out in?
The money thing is such an issue, though, because they just don't have... Where do you draw that from? I mean, they're so in debt from all these wars and weddings.
Gotta get the Lannisters' power.
I know.
Or at least dragon eggs.
Where does he even... I don't know. This is...
The Iron Bank would be a source, but at that point, I don't really know how... I mean, that seems like sort of a glaring hole because they do have some collateral in that they all have dragons and, like, they have a new ruler that everyone likes. Like, have Jaehaerys meet with them. Reach out to Jaehaerys.
Or why don't they just print more money?
Yeah.
My favorite thing, when people are like, oh, man, the economy, it's like, just print more money.
Right?
I know. It's the most annoying thing you can say.
I know, but at least, like, you can say that about modern day. Yeah. At least. You'd have to mine it. You have to mine some kind of gold or gemstones later. Or enslave people and use that as free labor. Like, that's one pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got to go get the slaves and bring them back and you got to feed them. So honestly, at the end of the day, once you factor in all the cost and maintenance, like, you're probably getting like a very small margin versus what it would be just to find a really good gold mine or to grudgingly give people from Casterly Rock more power.
Well, and
those
people,
crafty individuals,
those the Lannisters,
keep them away from us.
They're looking for more power. So
of
we
course.
See Rhaena when she heads over there. I thought that whole thing made me LOL because
what do you mean?
When she escaped from Fair Isle because what's his name was like
she was kicked out of Fair Isle.
Well, he was like, you can't be here anymore. You and your
Franklin
whole squad,
farming.
Franklin's like, GTFO, get out of here. My sister's going to stay here and get married. Bring your little girly husband with you and
never
look back. And she, it's like 40 of her and her hangers-on left to go hang out with the Lannisters.
Right.
And
it's like getting kicked out of like an area of a hotel or something. That's not a good example.
No, but it's like you're the party. They talked so much about how she was the center. Yeah, she was the center of court life and then she gets kicked out. I thought that whole thing, I really enjoyed reading those portions.
Me too.
But she heads to Casterly Rock, kind of you were saying at the beginning of the episode, she knew she could be sheltered there and
a previous alliance.
Another thing I thought was funny, she shows up with so many people and they immediately
throw a feast
and they also stay for a month. It's like, where are you gonna stay?
There's extra room, man.
I know, but it's just so, it's such a wild concept that I feel like that really shed light into those scenarios in my head. Anyway,
there's a really great piece. I've probably talked to you about this before, but it makes me think about how when in Leonardo da Vinci's life, like when he would work for different kingdoms, basically, or different towns, I say kingdoms, but it's like any kind of like a commonwealth of power, like a town or the seat of a kingdom, blah, 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 blah. They would give him like a string of apartments.
Yeah.
He had like one to live in. He had like friends that like were part of his hangers on basically. And also they needed like workspace.
Or one to play bagpipes in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that guy who lives down the street from you.
Exactly. Someone down from the street from me bought a old firehouse and all he does is play bagpipes. I'm going to make friends with that guy. He's like, I need a place that's secluded enough to play bagpipes in that no one's going to be bothered by it. But still, bagpipes are so aggressive, you can still hear it beyond the walls of a firehouse. But that's what happened here. They went to Casterly Rock, and they're like, we have like loft apartments ready for you guys, and the amenities are available to you. But keep in mind, it wasn't I can't think of a place in the realm that would give them, really. Maybe if they went all the way up to Winterfell, they would get like a little bit of frigidness, but ultimately, if they liked you, they would sort of like open-handedly give you something.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to say, I can't think of a lot of places in the realm that would give you something.
Well,
especially not here.
Especially not here.
Yeah,
and
not
I think
these
that
folks.
Rhaena thought and hoped that, and for a while they could just kind of make a soft landing, but then people started talking and they wanted things. And it was very clear that the Lannisters, for good reason, are really trying to grab more power. You have to seize the opportunities that are given to you. And you had this.
Do you have to?
We don't have
to. Should you?
But take a. If I was a Lannister guy, what was his name? I can't remember. If I was him and the queen in the West shows up on my doorstep, I'm going to try to get in with that. You know what I mean? It would be such a shame to just sit back and let it all play out. Anyway, lots of people were trying to like...
He didn't want to just play it out, though. He wanted their... Sorry, I said the wrong thing. He didn't want just to, like, get in with them. He wanted dragon power.
Right.
Because he has, like, his own thoughts. He's like, I'm smarter than the people out east. I mean, he doesn't know how crafty Jaehaerys is about to be, and also doesn't know how much training he's had, how he could like pretty much beat Maegor, which can, and that was said in this chapter, everyone, for God's sakes. I forget who said it. Classic. But someone who knew Maegor was like, I think it was one of the Septons.
People. Oh yeah, yeah.
It was one of the Septons. Yeah. I could be wrong. That had previous experience with the Targaryen dynasty before they went to Dragonstone with Jaehaerys. But they said, if you were in single combat with Maegor, I'd put my money on you. Talk about just if we thought Jaehaerys was getting extra context for no reason before.
I know.
I mean, but in his defense, apparently he's doing like incredibly hard training every single day.
Which, and getting pummeled.
Getting pummeled, yeah. Getting battered by all the different members of his Kingsguard, which we've already like previously been described as having different disciplinary skills with weapons. So that's cool. I mean, like, if you are fighting these different kinds of swordsmen, spearsmen, you got like ranged weaponry, and you're not really asking them to pull too many punches. And like, they're also, the thing that I really liked is when they had that chant that they would yell whenever like a mortal blow was like figuratively done on him. They would say, "All hell, the king is dead.
The king is dead.
All hell, the king."
Mm-hmm.
Like that kind of jibing, that kind of like just ribbing is the kind of thing that like helps a person in those positions, like someone like a Commodus from Gladiator or someone like Joffrey, like would never get treated with, which creates that separation of being like completely unrelatable.
It's fun energy.
Yeah, it makes you like more grounded,
mm-hmm.
way more down to earth and like able to communicate with, I mean, really all levels of people, not just Highborn folks, but also being able to like communicate easily with the small folk. And if anything, like, especially when you're dealing with people from places like Old Town or even like imagine like a Carthene representative comes, like being able to just cut through the bullshit and have the kind of context that comes with being made fun of by the guys that are your like your servants.
Mm-hmm.
Like talk about
your protectors.
Down to earthness. Like they listen to everything you say and yet they're like fucking with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're not getting any apparently at the same time.
Or maybe you are.
Yeah,
for
maybe.
Practice.
So what do you think about that? Do you think that the what's her name?
Wild girl?
Yeah, the wild Corianne Wild. Or any of the other handmaidens that were sent to disrupt and spy. It was like a joint effort by Lady Alyssa mm-hmm. and Rogar earlier in the chapter. Handmaidens and septas sent to potentially disrupt the idea of those two staying married.
Both.
By piousness.
Yeah.
By
lust.
Sexiness.
Yeah.
By also just...
We're going to hit every angle.
Every angle. This is actually a pretty good idea, though. Like, just giving... And we get a lot of context. This is super, super savvy by George to put in there that Alysanne had not really had a normal childhood where she was exposed to a lot of different people. And so maybe she felt like he doesn't come right out and say this, but it's sort of implied that like maybe Alysanne like just didn't have anyone to rely on. So she thought that like Jaehaerys was her only option. And so maybe by giving her like friends, really. So it was like girls for Jaehaerys and then friends for her, which,
right.
I mean, that's so funny.
It's really smart. I was struck by Alysanne's childhood and in her description, she was bright but unremarkable is essentially what her description was about her.
Is anyone remarkable, really?
It just it was.
Other than physically, like cool looking?
I felt like with how much fanfare is around and how much buildup we have to their rule. In the chapter, in these chapters, in this book,
yeah,
it just struck me really hard that she was described as unremarkable, and we just don't have a lot of information about
her.
She's
about to be remembered for hundreds of years.
Sure, we just didn't have a lot of information about her, but I think your point is correct, and I think that was a really smart move on their part. And I
super smart. I mean, it could have worked because if you don't have anyone to depend on, or you don't have any contacts, or
they're young,
you don't have anyone to like. You think that, like, if you're, it's like kind of like not Stockholm syndrome, sort of like that, where it's like, this is the only thing I have, and therefore it's good and like the best thing, and I'll give everything I have to this. So they're trying to like just add some variety that would shake up the dedication.
Right. They're young, they're kids. Who's to say? I mean,
It didn't work. That's just to say.
It didn't work. I mean, yeah. You were asking if Jairus did it.
Oh, yeah. I hope he did. Like, yeah, which particular angle? Can you tell everyone, like, what the context were, like, what they potentially could have been? I was going to say while I pee, but I'm going to hold it.
You have to pee?
Sorry.
Maybe you should while I figure out what they were.
You can't remember?
Well, there was the one that we talked about at the beginning where it was she was helping him give practice. And then there was...
He slept with all of them.
Yeah, he slept with all of them. There was where he refused them.
Alisson helped out with the practice.
There's lots of different options, but...
Yeah, there were options.
I mean, they're young. They're having a good time. Like, Jairus is painted as such a god. I feel like it would be kind of nice if something happened, you know?
Like, Dragonstone's like summer camp. Especially when they send them. If anything, it just made it more fun to stay there.
The vibes just kind of feel high every time we talk about Dragonstone. And so
They're so disciplined, right?
And they're just far away, and they're kids, and they're kind of on a little sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
And Alisson talks about how...
they quarantined for like 2 years.
Yeah, they did, but they did it in a good way because they went somewhere cool.
I went to the Dominican Republic, and I hung out on a beach line for 2 years, and I had a good time.
We tried. We did the poor man's version of that. Anyway, Alisson talks about, she says, many years from now, when we are old and gray, we shall look back upon these days and smile, remembering how happy we were. So obviously it was a good time.
Yeah, they're going to miss those days.
Of course they're going to miss these days because she's like...
Yeah, I miss that cave.
We're going to go back to... we're going to go back to King's Landing and she's like, I'm never going to have time with you ever again because everyone's going to demand your attention.
Yeah, everyone's going to want a piece.
And here
I'm
the one.
I haven't got to get a piece yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think regardless, and like you were saying, it's a good point. They're doing everything they can to get ready to rule and...
Almost ridiculously, though, right?
Smart, though.
Super
Instead
smart.
Of being thrust into it like every other ruler preceding, every other Targaryen preceding it.
Like Tommen.
Yeah. Well, he has opportunity to really shore himself up physically, spiritually, mentally, relationshiply, you know? I think that that's smart. And so kind of like we were saying at the beginning... It's all about who's in your corner. And if he's able to really solidify those relationships, there's a point in the chapter that kind of teased how what was going to come under fire was not physically a physical thing, but Jaehaerys and Alisson's relationship was going to be under fire. And, you know,
whether or not they consummated it, is that what you mean? Or
there was a line that said, so he's training hard for whatever trials come his way as a new king. And it says, but little did he know, it was his worth as a man and his love for his little queen that would be put to the test.
Mm.
Anyway, they're getting ready to prepare for whatever things come their way. And I think that that's smart to kind of solidify their team. But maybe I'm just jealous. I don't know.
I mean, I definitely am for sure. I think that it makes sense that they're more stalwart than most people going into leadership because they did come up around Maegor's BS.
So many mistakes. And even his own dad was not the strongest guy. And he's so afraid of being like his dad.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder to do well. But I really enjoyed this chapter because it was very chaotic, but in a really fun way. And we have all these players and there's a lot of figuring out to do as the realm is so new still, but they're coming up on the 50-year anniversary and we're right at the cusp of Jaehaerys really being able to take over. And so... I just thought that George wrote this chapter in such a fun and different way because typically we're just used to in A Song of Ice and Fire him focusing on one area at a time per chapter, you know? So it's kind of fun
true.
To get the jump around that we don't usually get from the text with him. So
I wanted to talk about the Starks for a second and Walton Stark taking over for Brandon Stark and then he dying. Having a giant pull, the giant pulled him apart,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And then Alaric Stark, who we've read about in Aswolf, like being the guy who's watching over Winterfell whenever the famous visit of Alisson to like Queen's Crown happens. And like there's the further context on like what the vibe is up at the wall. And also a little bit more context on how, like, more fresh and wild the wildlings are right now.
Uh-huh.
With giants not being, like, it's so weird that giants are, like, a rumor. But I guess it would make sense, especially with the Sins of the Flesh stuff happening. And, like, how that, like, did any of this even happen? Or was Rhaegar even a real person being alive? Like, why they would be questioning about like whether or not giants existed at the time of A Song of Ice and Fire. Totally. But as this reads, they basically just like, I don't know if this is like just a kind of inconsistency from the author, because like he thought he would make giants more like mythical in A Song of Ice and Fire originally, because he wrote it like starting in like 1990 basically, which is at this point, Jesus Christ, George was a much younger man at that point. But like there was giants just like a day's ride, like less than a day's ride, like outside the wall basically.
Right, at this point, yeah.
And the wildlings, I guess, you know, at least talked like they were cannibals, because they said that they ate people. And so I like more context on the stuff that we know about. And if you were reading this, imagine you weren't reading, you didn't have any knowledge of A Song of Ice and Fire before. Like, I don't know about you, but I would be so freaking intrigued by like what?
1,000,000%.
And like all the bad guys from before
are hanging
now,
out there.
They just got sent there, and like some of them were against each other, mm-hmm. but they're like, nah, we got this. Like, let's just take over shit.
And now there's giants and people on the other side of the wall. 1,000,000%. I had that same thought of just how it gives Winterfell even more of like this. I mean, Winterfell already has such a little magical place in our heart. This gives it a little bit more of a mystical, magical color to it.
Yeah, not just like Brandon Stark's vibe or the Stark's vibe in general, but like on top of that, this.
Right.
Like if you're going to, I know that they're adapting later on in this book for Hot D, but like show me two giants being killed.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? I don't want to see giants die, but you see what I'm saying? Like it's more exciting.
The action. It's because that's more... never mind. I was going to say that's more fantastical than the political intrigue happening at King's Landing, but I'm forgetting about the dragons. There's literally dragons, though. So.
Right, but also, like, now that we've been through, like, a lot of the sort of splishy, splashy, like, bits of A Song of Ice and Fire in the latter seasons, maybe it was because of how they were depicted. I don't know. But now we've been through that. It's like, I kind of, like, find myself wishing for that S1, S2, S3 whispering in the hallways shit that, like, TV shows still try to do to this day, but they really can't quite nail it. I've told you this, but I'll just say it for everyone listening. The show that I found to, like, have the most, like, actually, like, understanding of what Game of Thrones did and try to reproduce it is The Righteous Gemstones and, like, how their family members talk to each other as they're planning their church's empire. And, like, the cool little sets that they have and, like, how ridiculous some characters are, but yet they still, like, hammer home, like, their dumb points. It's like, there's something about Game of Thrones and A Song of Ice and Fire in general where George, in this case, and then also David and Dan and Brian and Dave, were aware of the faults of these characters. And a lot of modern stories are, like, not really giving every character faults. They're just, like, really pigeonholing certain characters into being, like, cartoonishly faulty. And then, like, some people are just so badass.
Right, right.
And it's like they can be badass while also having faults.
Right.
And that's something that, like, I don't know, like I said, it was really, like, understood in Gemstones. They almost, like, they're, like, all faults. They're, like, 85% fault with, like, a little bit of heart in there, which is cool. And, like I said, if you haven't watched that, it's a comedy. It's ridiculous. But, like, just the sets alone and the conversations that they have, it's a totally different time period, a totally different world, but, like, the same energy. Like, a family with, like, a hangers-on and, like, potential power and, like, things that they could do with their influence and wealth, but that they can't quite pull off because they suck a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is literally what we're talking about right here. Yeah.
Can I just say, I think we covered everything. Should we go on to owns?
Wow. Yes, we shall.
You ready?
Yeah. Took a short bathroom break, so we had to transition out of that.
bathroom
super
break.
Super smooth right now.
Some injuries.
Yeah, I cut my arm just now on a brick wall. So, what are you doing there? Is that, you got something?
My own.
Oh, cool.
Notes for the chapter.
Okay, I didn't know what that was. I just look at that, I was like, this doesn't look like anything to me.
Mm-hmm.
So those are your notes, huh? Wow. How come you didn't talk about any of that?
I did. I did every single thing.
I'm kidding. I can't read it. I have to get
it. I can't read.
We need another contact sponsorship. Otherwise, I'm not going to get contact lenses again.
So true.
So, what is your own?
My own for the chapter is kind of mean, but it is what it is. My own for the chapter is Raina describing Andrew Farman. It says later, when asked why she had chosen such an unpromising spouse, Raina Targaryen replied, "He was kind to me." Which I feel like it's like kind of a damning thing to say. So that made me LOL.
Some people might like that.
I know, but it was just like, that's all she could say about him. But really, she liked his dad and his sister. You know, he's like, he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, that made me LOL. So I'm making that my own.
Okay.
What's yours?
I'm going to give my own to that sister, Lady Alyssa, who was secretly getting it in with Raina the whole time.
Right.
Props to her.
The real squad.
Props to her for being like a proto-Arya as well, which I hate to pigeonhole like atypical women as like the same thing, but I feel like George did it first. So, okay.
Do you know what we didn't talk about? Sorry, before I go on to your next
one. No,
it's how powerful their little, the foursome were.
Dude, the four heads.
Yeah.
/ five heads sometimes when her boy's hanging around.
Right, exactly. Oh, that was the other thing. Okay, that's the other thing I wanted to put on my own. So Raina took every single one of her friends flying on her
like
dragon.
Like 40 people.
But never,
never
once her man.
I know, yeah. But they said it's maybe because he didn't want to.
I know, but still, it's like, he's nice. And also, he never rides my dragon.
Yeah, it sounds like they had a lot of fun, honestly, on Fair Isle, to be honest.
It does.
Yeah, no, I like them more than most. I mean, I like what Jaehaerys and Alysanne are doing for sure. But, I mean, that might be too intense for a lot of people. I think that, like, a lot of people probably turned off, honestly. Whereas I really like the intensity of what Jaehaerys is doing. I think a lot of people probably think that that's, and that, like, that that's dumb.
Right.
That he's subjecting himself to that. And I totally get that point
but
of view,
Fair
too.
But Fair Isle is just a, it just sounds a like
hang.
A party.
Yeah, no, it's a hang.
I know it wasn't totally like that.
They should have adapted this era of the show.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the other part yet, though. So I will be very curious to see when we finish at the end how we feel.
How we feel which part should have really been adapted.
Yeah, since we're in charge.
Meanwhile, so many folks on Twitter are like, enough of the Targaryen shit.
I mean, I kind of...
Right.
Agree.
Yeah, you get it. But at the same time, like, you go through this and it's like, well, I mean... Compared this to what? I mean,
Winterfell, the North, the Giants. Come on.
You're right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, but this is within the Targaryen shit, at least.
I guess.
That stuff is. It's in Fire and Blood.
Right. True.
It is in Fire and Blood. I mean, it's either that or the new Gossip Girl, which I did really like. But I'm saying, like, there's only so much TV time, you know?
Right.
So why not have unlimited? All right. I'm going to move on. You can't just have a whole network of, like, the adaptations of the stuff that
Why not?
Because we haven't made it there yet. We're getting closer and closer to everyone getting exactly what they want. Shout out to Corianne Wilde for basically living out the life that was depicted within the Sins of the Flesh, the High and the Low, A Wanton's Tale, and the Wickedness of Men. But all versions bear the subtitle... A Caution for Young Girls.
That is so...
This is my other quote.
Such a
my
primer. Such a, like those schoolgirl primers from the 1800s. Yeah.
Can you imagine? A Caution for Young Girls. Right. I don't want to talk crap about anyone who has kids that, like, wants to expose them to stuff like that. I mean, like, the only caution I have for the thing that I'm responsible for is, like, don't get me involved with you talking to other dogs, man.
Right.
You're slowing me down. But as far as, like, you know, what you like, dude, like what you like. And Strike likes a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Also, honorable mention to Mark Farman, who choked on a fishbone and died a little bit after.
Rest in peace.
A little bit a year after, a little bit over a year after Andrew and Drow and Raina got married. And he was always really nice to them, which I think was that year must have been even more satisfying for everyone involved. But also shout out to George for having Franklin Farman being put in a cod full of freshly caught or a hold full of freshly caught cod. He didn't say whether or not the guy died, but I'd like to imagine he drowned or was like, you know, those fish that clean your feet.
Mm-hmm.
He was like slowly nibbled to death by all these freshly caught cod.
That's what I'm
saying. Fishbone, fish hold.
That whole sequence of events between the four-headed dragon, the fish scenarios, the how he underestimated that people really loved Raina and Alyssa.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, is that her name?
Yeah, Alyssa. Yeah, no, I was thinking of a different... Yeah, Alyssa, yeah. Lady Alyssa.
Yeah,
Alyssa Farman, yeah.
It's just that whole sequence. It kind of reminded me for absolutely no reason. Never mind. You know in Pirates of the Caribbean when they're on the docks?
Oh, this is good. No.
I don't know why it reminded me of that.
Which dock scene?
The part when Elizabeth is captured by Jack Sparrow.
Oh, the first one.
The very first one, yeah.
Yeah, when they're up on the cliff wall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why it gave me that kind of energy, but it's like the fish smell and kind of fighting and whatever. It doesn't make any sense that I would make that conclusion, but I just thought it was a really fun sequence, and that was another moment to add to that.
Got it. You always remember this is the day that you almost... got through an own segment without weirdness. All right, now it's time for us to read some owns sent by y'all. We're going to start this one out with an email sent to us from Mike McCann, classic, for the year of the three brides, and then we'll move on to an own for this current chapter. I'm going to start it. I'm going to pass my phone back and forth to Hannah, and we're going to read this thing. Hold up. I was not expecting this chapter to be what it was and definitely wasn't expecting to enjoy it so much. A lot of people about fire and blood in general.
Mm-hmm.
This is as much a tale of love and happiness as it is about political drama. First of all, I love the whole wedding between, he says Roger. I know that it was auto-corrected, but I like that. Between Roger and Alyssa, anyone else getting major Robert vibes from Roger? I mean, I know he's a Baratheon, but come on, he's even described basically the same. And that double-sided great axe is so similar to Robert's great hammer. Sure. Particularly loved the entrance of the children. It was the arrival of the children, me too, dude, that set King's Landing to talking for years to come. King Jaehaerys and Princess Alysanne were the last to appear. You know, it didn't correct Jaehaerys or Alysanne to a weird word. Maybe he did just type Roger. Maybe the UK version of this book, Rogar, is just called Roger because maybe Rogar is normal for them and like Roger is actually more exotic. Please let us know in a follow-up email. We're the last to appear, descending from a bright sky on their dragons, Vermithor and Silverwing. The dragon pit still lacked the great dome that would be its crowning glory. It must be recalled. Their great leather wings stirring up clouds on sand as they came down side by side, the awe and terror of the gathered multitude. Like, how badass of an entrance is that? Imagine that in a TV show. It would be epic.
Jaehaerys really came into his own this chapter, and I really started to respect him a lot more. I think he had the right balance of kind but fair and stern when he needed to be. Quote, Jaehaerys the Conciliator is rightly honored in the annals of the Seven Kingdoms for his calm demeanor and even temper. But let no man think that the fire of the Targaryens did not burn in his veins. He showed it then. When Septon Matthaeus finally paused for a breath, the king said, I will accept chastisements from her grace my mother, but not from you. Hold your tongue, fat man. If another word passes your lips, I will have them sewn shut.
Paul Atreides.
Just wow. The whole stand up with the Kingsguard is iconic, and I can imagine that perfectly. That truly was the best Kingsguard there ever was. The whole runaway marriage thing I found incredibly endearing. Yes, I know they're siblings, but they're Targaryens, so I'm used to it at this point. It was such a sweet moment, and even when they are face down 7-1, they stood their ground. Send me to the ends of the earth. I forgot about this. I love this moment.
I forgot they were siblings.
Send me to...
oh, whoops.
Send me to the ends of the earth and wed me to the King of Massavoy or the Lord of the Grey Waste. Silverwing will always bring me back to Jaehaerys. And with that, she raised herself to her toes and lifted her face to the king, and he kissed her full on the lips whilst all looked on, the only time Jaehaerys ever got some. My heart melts. How sweet of a moment that is. How sweet of a moment is that? I have no idea what era House of the Dragon takes place, but I want to see this.
Nice. Well, it's not this one. My own has to go to Rogar. It says Rogar here to being the OG Robert and just not giving a shit. Here's a little quote that I can totally imagine Robert saying. Lord Baratheon was having none of it. I have seen your daughter, Rogar said to Celtigar. They have no chins, no teats, and no sense. What a guy, crying laughing emoji tilted to the side. Hope you guys are well. Recently got so drunk on a night out, I lost my phone, keys, and somehow even my shoes. I don't know either. All the best, Mike from England.
Your shoes.
Thanks, Mike. I hope whoever found your shoes made good use of them.
Do you remember the lost shoes from New York Comic Con?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was quite a tale. Moral of the story
come
is...
Come to Ice and Fire Con, we'll tell you it.
Yeah, come to Ice and Fire Con, we'll tell you all about the missing shoes. If you do take off your shoes, just try to keep an eye out on them. You know, like try to keep a visual.
I hope you got them back, Mike.
And here's an own from Travis Cole for this chapter. I'm ahead in Ice and Fire now. My dog had diarrhea last night, so I just stayed up and kept reading. Just finished Birth, Death, and Betrayal under King Jaehaerys I, and I'm really falling in love with this book. Thank you for doing a read-through because I couldn't. get past the third or fourth chapter in my first attempt a few years back.
I'm so glad. Thanks, neither dude. Could we. Just kidding.
I got through it. Just, yeah, we did.
It's more fun this way. So.
I'm like, wait a second, not me.
And here's his own. He says, my own for a surfeit of rulers goes to the mention of ice being used to behead Sir Oliver Bracken after he co-led the rebellion on the wall with Sir Mayman Mallory by Lord Walton Stark. Unfortunately for Walton, he was torn apart by giants after chasing the rest off. The rebels. After chasing the rest of the rebels beyond the wall. He did slay two of them before his untimely end, though, which is my second own.
Wow, an own within an own.
So good. Taking two giants down with him, that's not so bad.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks to Michael and Travis for hanging out with us in the off-season, sitting in their owns. I just want to say that we are going to talk about George's last big blog post and his update on Winds and his update on new spinoffs and just in general, the adaptations in the universe of Song of Ice and Fire that he's continuing to put energy into, because we got a pretty big update. If you haven't seen it, we retweeted it on our Twitter page and we retweeted some of y'all's reactions to it as well. If you're interested in going and reading it yourself and not waiting for us to talk about it, you can do that. But there's stuff moving and we still don't have a release date for Hot D. Which is fine.
Curious. It's got to be coming soon.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly have no idea what to expect. I thought that I had a sort of idea of what to expect, but to be honest, like, we're all just kind of like used to what has been coming and no one's really an expert. We're just like living in the minds and bodies that we were in coming up through the 20 teens, and this is a whole new ballgame. I don't know what to expect.
All I know is I hope that the release date for House of the Dragon gets released through a block of ice. That's all I hope for. So.
Can you imagine?
Yes, because we lived through it.
I want it to be like written in the sky from the flames of an actual dragon.
Ooh, fun. Yeah. Okay.
I want them to actually get an actual dragon for this one, not a fake one.
Good luck.
What else is there to talk about? Ice and Fire Con, iceandfirecon.com for your tickets. Use code GOO if there's still a place to use the code. Sorry, I don't have better information on that. Could have double checked, but I will for the next episode. If you at all are considering going, please come and hang out with us and say hi. That would be fun. Like I said, there's a pool. I mean, I don't really know what else I could say to sweeten the deal for you. I don't have a pool. Right. There is a pool there.
I'm just looking forward to seeing people after so long. Yeah. So it's going to be a really, really fun time.
Yeah.
You can find us on social media if you want to send us an own, if you want to tweet us about Ice and Fire Con, if, you know, you lose your shoes or whatever, just let us know. You can find us.
If you found Mike's shoes, also tell us.
Just look for Game of Owns on Twitter, on Instagram, and then you can also send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
That's it, right? That's it. Our next chapter is called...
A Time of Testing, The Realm Remade. Jaehaerys arrives in King's Landing, and we're off. Can't wait.
He's coming in with all of his new muscles. Mm-hmm. He knows how to please even the most. Anyway, okay, I'm out. Y'all have a good...
We'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.